we're going to be discussing this morning. They're spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. The chapter is called Ingalborn's Version. What Shukadeva Goswami is going to, the range of what he's going to describe begins with the living entity distinct from matter and the coverings of the living entity in different varieties. So the living entity and matter and the Lord. So then he covers a span of three different conceptions of the Lord. The Lord in his Virat Rupa, the Lord in his impersonal feature, and the Lord in his personal feature. Just a short span of verses. So it's not going very, very super deeply into those subjects. Those subjects will be expanded later. But we should understand from this there are different conceptions of God. And even in those categories, there's subdivisions of conceptions of God. And according to one's conception of God, one lives one's life. One is guided by that. Whatever is supreme, whatever it is that reality rests upon, that existence rests upon, there's different conceptions. There's one American woman that comes to the Gita class, Bhakti Bhiksha class sometimes in Oswego. What's her name?
Pam.
Pam. Pam made a really nice comment last time I saw her. I asked, you know, how do you like the Bhagavad Gita discussion? She said, you know, the thing I like most about Bhagavad Gita is that it's not teaching some ism. It's just teaching principles. And there's this principle. So, just like Krishna says at the end of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, deliberate, do what you feel you must do. So there's the freedom of the living entity anyway, because that's what we do anyway. We deliberate, we do what we feel we should do. And it's respectful to a discriminating, intelligent person. You don't push them or induce them by fear. You explain and you let them make choices. And they can make good choices or foolish choices and learn from foolish choices. Boy, that was... Hopefully come back to... Let's try that one again. Can you explain it again? So, in this section, the role of intelligence and the connection between real intelligence, spirit meaning spiritual intelligence, the spiritual capacity of discrimination, and hearing is embedded right within these verses. If you listen carefully, I'll try to bring it out. And that's going to connect with this afternoon's discussion about effective hearing. We have to, so there's components to effective hearing that are embedded in this discussion. We have to have our lights on. We have to be alert. We have to actively listen. And after listening, we have to actively contemplate and discriminate and then decide and then act. So persons that have their lights on, or Monishinam, those who are thoughtful, those who are wanting to go from where we are now to where we want to be, and have a clear idea of what that is, according to great sages and the authorities of scriptures and guiding us in spiritual life, then we can move, we can be transformed. And Otherwise, it's patchwork of mental adjustments and really not getting anywhere. And you know, like a little bit of the discussion yesterday, feeling good about something, but then the transformation doesn't happen. We're still stuck. And stuck and spinning our wheels and stuck. How come I'm stuck? How come I'm not? So this is helping us to understand how to progress by describing this philosophical, who may look like a philosophical thing, but it's very practical. Living entity covered. And conceptions of the Supreme. He looks also covered, the Virat Rupa, but then there's finer than that is the impersonal Brahman, and beyond all of that, and finer than that, the most subtle or most complete form of the conception of the Supreme is the personal future. Okay, so that's the summary of what we're going to be discussing this morning. Text 31. Text 31 is a conclusion point of the description of the Virat Rupa, and the message in the Virat Rupa section, previous section, is that knowing that the living entities desire XYZ, the universal form manifested the prototype of XYZ, so the living entities could experience XYZ. It's like he's reciprocating the desire of the living entity, so the Lord manifests the prototype of those things so the living entity can enjoy those things. That's how kind he is. He has nothing to do with those things, but he has everything to do with the living entity out of affection and love, just like a loving relationship, like parents with their children. They don't have an interest in toys and stuff, but they understand their child has interest in something, so loving parents, they, of course, not anything, everything, but they'll provide things. So one of my appreciations out of this whole discussion and this whole canto is what efforts the Lord goes through to provide for the living entities, everything, including illusion. All the variety, and the purpose of that illusion is to bring us back to Him. He goes through so much, Lord, so much. Whew. So, text 31. The seven elements of the body, namely the thin layer on the skin itself, the flesh, blood, fat, marrow, and bone, are all made of earth, water, and fire. Whereas the life breath, prana, is produced by sky, water, and air. Prabhupada has a very interesting report here where the construction of the whole material world is prominently made by three elements, namely earth, water, and fire. Like, you know, the physical, gross physical part, like bodies, for example, and houses and trees and bodies. But the living force, the subtle part, the living force, prana, is produced by sky, air, and water. So he says this common element is water. And so the Lord supplies lots of water within the entirety of creation. Water, being the most prominent in the material creation, is the principal element of all the five. The material body is thus an embodiment of the five elements, and the gross manifestation is perceived sensations of touch are perceived due to the thin layer on the skin, and bone is as good as hard stone. So it's, you know, soft and hard, subtle and gross, but it's just the Lord's energies mixed in different ways. It makes variety. Hey, what an engineer. The breathing air of life is produced of sky, air, and water. I've many times wondered, prana, life, air, is that just like, what's the difference between the air out here and prana, life, air? It's not the same. Air, sky, and water. Therefore, open air, regular bath, and ample space in which to live are favorable for healthy vitality. Put those elements in the right combination, it's better for your health. Reduce any one of them, it's debilitating for your health. Keep the outside right so the inside is right. Fresh produce from the earth, like grains and vegetables, as well as fresh water and heat, is good for the upkeep of the gross body. Then he doesn't go into this, but other things that help the life air, the things that disturb the life air. So, just for health purposes, one should see to those things. But, you know, of course, life is far more than just having that part of life together. Text 32. The sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature. There's knowledge acquiring senses, and there's working senses, and there's the mind. There's 11. Gyanindriyas, Karmindriyas, and the mind. 11. The sense organs are attached to the modes of nature. And the modes of nature are products of false ego. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences, such as happiness and distress, and the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. Far out. So, what an engineer. I mean, it's just like from subtle comes from false ego. Here's how it's described in the third canto by Kapila to Devahuti. There's Pradhan. Pradhan is the subtle, undifferentiated sum total of all material energy. This unmanifested, undifferentiated state, like a cloud. Mahavishnu glances, living entities in time, enter to that cloud, Pradhan. And then Pradhan then becomes transformed into Mahatattva. And Mahatattva means the sum total where the ingredients are differentiated. And the first element that differentiates out of the undifferentiated Pradhan is our best friend, false ego. First element. First element to come, last one to go. False ego. False ego in contact with the mode of goodness produces the mind. The modes of nature are also then, they're there, they're always there, but now they're activated by the soul being present. So the mode of goodness produces the mind, False ego in touch with the motive with the motive goodness produces intelligence. False ego in touch with the motive ignorance produces the five gross elements, which in turn produce the karmendriyas and gyanendriyas. So you can have now a warehouse with all the parts. Then according to the living entities desire and their deserve, their guna and the karma, the parts assemble and one gets a body according to his karma and his guna. One from this shelf and one from that shelf, we put them all together. So now it's saying the other way around. The gyanendriyas and karmendriyas, the senses, are attached to the modes of nature. The modes of nature are products of the false ego. That is, so when the false ego manifests, this pradhan becomes agitated. By false ego, not only we become agitated, pradhan becomes agitated by false ego. And the modes of nature then manifest. And then according to the modes of nature, false ego in contact with this mode, that mode, and the other mode produce things. Now, go the other way. The senses, so we have these senses. The senses are connected to the modes are connected to the false ego. Over here, the mind is subjected to all kinds of experiences. Happiness and distress, that's like the senses send a signal to the mind. Oh, it's cold. And we're thinking, oh, I'm uncomfortable because it's cold. But if it was hot summer, we would think, oh, this is very nice. But happiness and distress is the condition of the mind. Really has nothing to do with the soul. It's not what real happiness or real distress is. It's just the condition of the mind. It's just where we become subjected to duality. This is the teaching of the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We become subjected to duality, seventh chapter, excuse me, subjected to duality because of our disregard for Krishna. The other way around, if we give proper regard to Krishna, the influence of duality dissipates, is gone. It's like Raghunath Das Goswami chanting the holy name by the side of Radha Kund. Scorching heat. He didn't even know it was scorching heat. It wasn't like, oh, this is difficult, but I want to chant my rounds by Radha Kund. It was gone. We're hungry, we may be distracted by our hunger, but Raghunath Das didn't know what the feeling of hunger was. Although where was his consciousness? With Krishna. He didn't sleep. Where was his consciousness? Or hardly slept. Prabhupada spoke like that also in his final days, final weeks in Vrindavan. He said, during my life I've conquered the animal propensities of mating and sleeping. He slept very little. And now it's eating. So, progressively, we want to, not in a fanatical, artificial, unsustainable way, but we want to decrease involvement in matter and increase our involvement with Krishna. And one enhances the other. By increasing our chanting, we find we have more time. Because it just works that way. More time because Krishna energizes us and time works according to Krishna's direction. Anyway. Here's Prabhupada's purport that will immediately connect us with the process of hearing. Illusioned by material nature, the living entity identifies with false ego. more clearly. He's going to go a little more deeply into that message. When the living entity is entrapped in the material body, he at once identifies with the bodily relationships, forgetting his own identity as spirit soul. This false ego associates with different modes of nature, and thus the senses become attached to the modes of material nature. Well, that was real fast. We just got swallowed up by the spirit soul being in the body, identifying with the body through the medium of false ego, completely forgetting his own identity, what to speak of Krishna. And then feelings of happiness and distress according to the influence of the modes of nature, just like a little piece of wood being tossed out into the ocean. The wave goes up, the piece of wood goes up. The waves go down, the piece of wood goes down. It gets tossed this way and tossed that way, and oh, I'm feeling sick. I'm in an unnatural situation here. So that's intelligence. That comes next. The mind is the instrument for feeling different material experiences, but intelligence is deliberative and can change everything for the better. The intelligent person therefore can attain salvation from the illusion of material existence by proper use of intelligence. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. What is that function of intelligence? Prabhupada writes, an intelligent person can detect the awkward position of material existence. Hey, it's not fun over here. It's supposed to be fun. But I'm feeling sick. I want to vomit in this seasickness of being tossed around by the waves, and sometimes it's really stormy and whoa. Thus, the intelligent person begins to inquire as to what he is and why he's subjected to different kinds of miseries and how to get rid of all miseries. Inquisitive spirit. Then Krishna sends some association. Always. By good association, an advanced intelligent person can turn towards the better life of self-realization. It is advised, therefore, that an intelligent person associate with great sages and saints who are on the path of salvation. By such association, one can receive instructions. This is the hearing, the effective hearing message coming, which are able to slacken the conditioned soul's attachment to matter. Now, we're going to go more deeply into that. That was really quick. We start to inquire, hey, this is not fun anymore. And why not? Looking around saying, there's a whole lot of people that are, you know, they're not having fun either. They're not happy. They're struggling, and then all kinds of things go on. People do bad things to each other all the time when they don't want bad things done to themselves. Why do they do that? And inquisitiveness, then it's Krishna that sends some association. The light has to be on. There has to be intelligence to receive, because as discussed yesterday, we have different conceptions. We have conceptions of life, and they're not spiritual. So we hear things with not spiritual filters because of our conceptions. Really basic. not like a condemnation of people because they're bad. It's just how material nature works. Give some credit to Albert Einstein. His I mentioned this the other day, but I find it very moving, even with spiritual, in the realm of spiritual understanding. The scientific method absolutely depends upon your conceptions. There's no such thing as an experiment where you're just a blank slate and don't have any conceptions. Because his point is, depending upon the conceptions, that's going to determine what you perceive. Not only how you perceive, but what you perceive. Like data, you won't even perceive it if you don't have a conception that matches that data. It just passes right by you. So you can't, his point is, you can't separate the conception of the scientist with the experimental method. And so, you know, what scientist is objective? It's, according to Albert Einstein, rubbish. There's a conception. So, in spiritual life, we also have, we're carrying conceptions within the mind. So now we need to activate our intelligence, and we need good association to activate our spiritual intelligence, because otherwise we're going to work with material intelligence. So you have to tell our material intelligence, you please sit over there for a while. I want to use spiritual intelligence. I want to hear. I'm going to contemplate with that spiritual intelligence as best as I can. At least strive to do so. And that's part of effective hearing. I'm understanding. When I'm hearing with filters. But I want to be guided by Krishna, not by my material conceptions. So, what is the instruction and how to carry out the instruction? That contemplation in the mood of wanting to please Krishna, not just wanting to have more information in my little information basket over here. I want to be in my relationship with Krishna. That's what I want. So Krishna, please guide me. The prayerful mood, you'll see as we... So, intelligent doesn't mean you got a big degree. Intelligent means that you understand there's something fundamentally wrong with this whole dynamic of material existence. It's really unsuitable. It's not a fit place to be. Are there options? Is there another way to be than this materialistic way of life? There must be. I want to know that. And then good association, good instructions, careful deliberation, because that's what intelligence does. Discriminate this from that. So without good instruction, we don't even know what this and that are. We don't know right from wrong, good from bad. Thus the intelligent man gradually gets rid of the illusion of matter and false ego and is promoted to real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That was fast. But gradual. Why is it gradual? Because we're attached to our detrimental conceptions of trying to be happy in an independent, egoistic way. That's why it's slow. Text 33. Thus, by all this, the external feature of the personality of God, it is covered by gross forms such as those of planets, which were explained to you by me. So what Prabhupada does in the purport, I'll just summarize the main part. He describes from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text number 4, he describes separated material energies and describes a living entity as distinct from the separate separated material energies, and that those separated material energies make all varieties of existence in contact with the spirit soul and their karma and their guna. So now we have this whole system of sky, and in the sky there's planets. He makes the point that the material creation cannot cover Krishna, just like clouds cannot cover the sun. Rather, it's the other way around. The sun creates the clouds. The clouds may cover our vision, but the clouds can't literally cover the sun. So similarly, he says, the sun is millions of miles away, and the sky in which there's clouds is at most 100 miles. So how can 100 miles cover millions of miles? That's very simple. Similarly, how can Krishna be covered? Although he through his energies, just like through the sun creating clouds, through Krishna's energies, he creates planets and stuff. The whole variety, the whole shebang of material existence. But he's not influenced by it. He's not covered by it. He is in his own spiritual world. Although it's by his energies these things manifest. But materialistic people or persons that are averse to Krishna, they don't see that because they can't see God. He doesn't exist. You can't see the soul, it doesn't exist. But that, so that being covered condition is due to their attitude toward Krishna. And you change the attitude towards Krishna, you change the whole, the problem is solved. The path of self-realization is changing one's attitude towards Krishna. Just like that. Because the whole of illusion comes from Krishna. And Krishna can withdraw it. Because they have no eyes of transcendental vision, and because they cannot see the personality of God, and therefore they deny the existence of the Lord and the transcendental form of the Lord. The covering of the gigantic material feature is accepted by such men with a poor fund of knowledge. And how this is so is explained in the following verse. One of the things I like about this set of verses is it's putting the pieces of the puzzle right next to one another, so when there's a more complex picture of the puzzle, at least you know the pattern. So there's this Virat Rupa conception, is what he's saying. And the personality of God, it appears to be covered by the planets and so forth, the creation that he sent forth. Beyond this gross manifestation is a transcendental manifestation, finer than the finest form. It has no beginning, no intermediate stage, and no end. Mind-blowing. Whew. I can conceive of something, but what's beyond something? Whew. It exists, but it's beyond something. No beginning, no middle, no end. Beyond the limits of expression or mental speculation, and is distinct from the material conception. Ooh, that's spiritual. The person on the beginning of a spiritual quest, like this one. Ooh, spiritual. Beyond the mind, beyond expression. Inconceivable. I get relief from this harassment over here by thinking that one. Prabhupada describes in Bhagavad Gita that the impersonal nirvishesh shunyavad aspiration is born of frustration. I've had it over here. Let me go somewhere else. What is that somewhere else? Well, it's beyond this and beyond that. It's know this and know that. Let's go there. What it is, I don't know, but it's not this. And then, like, the special perk is, that's God, and guess what? You're Brahman too. I knew there was a problem, I just didn't recognize I'm God. I really like this impersonal thing over there. Ooh. So, in the Nirvishesha, is the phrase that there's Vishesha with qualities and Nirvishesha, no qualities. Just add the Nir in front of it and you've got the spiritual world. Apparently. But then, the next verse, neither of the above forms of the Lord, as just described unto you by me, from the angle, from the material angle of vision, because the impersonal is conception is negation of the material. Like you mentioned yesterday, the heads and tails of the opposite sides of the same coin. What is spiritual? Well, it's not this. That was tricky. What is it? Well, it's not that. Okay, what is it? It's not the other thing either. Okay, that's nice to know. But the personality of Godhead is beyond such a definition by negation. It's what He is. I've said this many times, but a good definition is both inclusive and exclusive. You say what the thing isn't, but you also have to say what the thing is. That's a good definition. So what is transcendence? What is supreme? What is God? This is what He isn't. But there's also what He is. So, the way that Prabhupada says it is negation of the negative is not negation of the positive. For those who know Him well, maya srishte vipashchitaha. So Prabhupada spends some time in the purport explaining this word vipashchitaha. Vipashchitaha means those who, the learned who are in knowledge of the Lord perfectly. Vipashchitaha. How does that happen? It happens by hearing. How do you get a proper spiritual conception? It's not by, you know, going to the shelf of mental speculators and finding different ideas and putting them in a blender and coming up with a new version. Which most people, if they do anything in relation to God, that's what they do. Because they don't have devotee association. It means they don't really want to know. They want to hang out over here and like spin out on speculation. Unfortunately. We've met people like that. They don't really want to know. They want to blah, blah, blah. That's what they want to do. So that's not intelligent. That's not the real feature of intelligence. The real feature of intelligence is, I want to know. And why do I want to know? Because I want to be there. I want to be in that association with those persons who are not spinning their wheels over here. Text 36. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests Himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of His transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although He is unaffected by all such activities, He appears to be so engaged. So He's describing the avatar forms of the Lord that appear in this created world. And He appears to do things. And He appears to be affected. Although He's not. Like, you know, Ram's separation from Sita. Looks like an attached man. And a henpecked husband, his wife wants the deer, so he goes running to get the deer for her. And causes all this trouble. Oh, henpecked husband. But it's not. It appears. He appears to be so engaged. Although he is unaffected. You know, from the material side, he's unaffected. But then there's a whole other side that is going to, well, go there. He has this transcendental emotion of Ram's separation from Sita. Just like the beggar pastime that was described yesterday evening. Krishna orchestrated the pastime so that Radha would hear something that would disturb her, so she would then become angry, and then she wouldn't see Krishna, so then Krishna would go and become having intensified feelings of separation from Radha, which would intensify Radha's feelings of separation from Krishna, because she knows nothing but Krishna. It's all just lila, it's not material. You can't think of these things that Krishna's enjoying. The intensification and varieties of love. That's what lila is. So now back to the incarnations of the Lord. They prithranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam dharmasis. He's doing those things. He's doing those things. So after describing the incarnations, there's this long verse of saying all the varieties of living entities from top to bottom, how they're created by the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada quotes 14.4 Bhagavad Gita, 14.4. Sarva yonisha kamtaya murtaya sambhavantiyaha, where material nature is supplying the bodies for living entities, and he's aham bija pratak pita, he's the father. So it looks like he's doing something. There's the material nature, mother, and as the father he provides the seed, and all these things start to happen. But what is he just, all he's done is he glanced. But how powerful is glance? The whole show starts to unfold because of his powerful glance. And that's done not by Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, it's done by Mahavishnu in this cloud of Mahatattva. Then, text 41, according to the different modes of material nature, the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, the mode of darkness, there are different living creatures who are known as demigods, human beings, and hellish, upper, middle, lower, living entities. O King, even a particular mode of nature being mixed with the other two is divided into three, and thus each kind of living creature is influenced by the other modes and acquires its habits also. So that's creation, diversity, and then he maintains as the maintainer of all the universe. He appears in different incarnations after establishing the creation, and as he reclaims all kinds of conditioned souls amongst humans, non-humans, and demigods. Then destruction. Just in a series of verses, sets up the whole thing. The great transcendentalists thus describe the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the pure devotees deserve to see more glorious things in transcendence, beyond these features of material creation. In the spiritual world, what does the Lord do? So pure devotees understand these other activities because they're activities of the Lord. But that's not the sum and substance of the Lord. He has his own abode. He has his own activities. And the devotees are attracted to both. But how he ends the purport: by development of pure devotional service, one can factually know the Lord as He is, and thus be trained in the bona fide service of the Lord, and be allowed to enter into the direct association of the Lord in so many capacities. The highest, glorious association with the Lord is made possible in the planet of the Loka Vrindavan, where Krishna enjoys Himself with the gopis and His favorite animals, the Surabhi cows. A description of this transcendental land of Krishna is given in Brahma Samhita, which is considered by Lord Sri Chaitanya to be the most authentic literature in this connection. So, this second canto, and it's Shukadeva Goswami is pointing to Krishna. He's describing all these things. So now back to intelligence. So that's text 44. That's the verses, the span of verses. The intelligent person understands, hey, something's fundamentally not right over here. Fundamentally, something's not right. Not with material intelligence, let me adjust this and adjust that. One devotee I was discussing this with said most people, including this particular devotee, spend so much time trying to adjust the shadow, when the real problem is the object that needs to move, not the shadow. But material life is spent shadow adjusting. The shadow, the reflection of reality, is reality to them, this material realm. And I want the elements to be right so that then I can find happiness, which is real sense gratification. I want sense gratification. I want selfish happiness. I have to adjust the elements. It'll never make one happy. Never, 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 never. An intelligent person understands that. Let me not get all caught up in this whole program of shadow adjusting. Let me find happiness in reality, in spiritual. Now I have some basic faith that there is such a thing. This is Adau Shraddha. There is spiritual reality. I don't know exactly what it is, but I have intrinsic faith it exists. I'd like to know that. Because from that, same, Krishna sends sadhu sangha. Then, bhajana kriya. Then comes the more subtle work, which is how we hear these messages to bring about the internal transformation, the internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness, which then brings out a change of heart, that spirit of trying to assimilate the messages and in a grateful spirit live according to those messages. That's where the transformation takes place. That's effective hearing with the proper condition of heart and intelligence activated. Not material intelligence, not how to bring this into the purview of my sense enjoyment. That paradigm has to be set aside. But the spiritual conception, Krishna is the enjoyer, and I'm meant to please Krishna. So how can I take this into the realm of pleasing Krishna? Then the transformation takes place. And our life changes. Everything changes. That even outside stuff changes. From the inside. Because that's how it works. What's inside determines what's outside. I'll just end with this, just connected with the verse from yesterday, which is, there is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about His direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. So, our attention needs to stay fixed on Krishna. We have to bring our attention to Krishna. We have to understand who is Krishna. We have to understand what illusion is, different than Krishna, and stay fixed on Krishna. Our desires have to change. But you know, how do you change a desire? Like, what's, how do you get inside there and, like, rewire the software or something? How do you do it? By hearing. And change this desire, that the aspirations of life change if we're hearing properly. The potency is there in the Bhagavatam to make that transformation. Janata Agha Viplava. Revolution. Revolutionary changes in the condition of heart of living entities. Potency is there. So how are we to properly receive that message? That's from midday class. So, any comments, questions? Yeah.
I think I'm missing or I'm unable to verbalize for myself in requesting your comment. I understand when you say that we have to realize and recognize there's fundamentally something not okay here. And when we study Sri Upanishad, it says all emanations are perfect and complete. So I'm trying to make that link.
When it says perfect and complete, it means it's as a unit, it functions as a complete whole. Now, the problem is not the creation, the problem is our approach to the creation. We're really screwing up because the product, material creation, is intended to bring us back to Krishna. Like using your iPod to crack open a walnut. It's not what the iPod is meant for. You don't find that in the operator's manual anywhere. So we're misusing the creation. It's perfect and complete. The problem over here is us and how we're approaching it. So we were awarded this creation and finding ourselves in this place because of our bad attitude. We found ourselves in prison. Trying to make it the kingdom of God. Kingdom of God without God. That's our program. We're missing that. That's not the intended purpose. Something else? Yeah?
Maharaj, you were describing the fact of yearning as being dealing with the light stone dawn, active intelligence, and then taking that, contemplating on the messages that are being heard, then deliberate on them, and then act. Could you elaborate that a little?
We're going to do that at midday.
Okay.
That's our discussion. And just we'll take it right from that. That sequence is directly from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and we'll expand on it.
Mentioned the process of hearing, and I have a question about effective hearing and even the motivation. When we start off the hearing process, we use a lot of inspiration and motivation to apply, and somewhere around the line, the motivation slackens,
yes.
Inspiration slackens. But then, because of devotees, we have opportunity to regularly hear, and,
yeah.
And that's there. So, how do you understand? So, one thing is that always sense gratification and the desire in the heart to actually go and look for that. On the other hand, there is also attachment to mode of ignorance and other modes,
sure.
And the motivation goes down, and then it has to come back again in the next hearing process of
yeah.
Again connecting back.
Yes.
So, how do we understand if one has to maintain, one has to reach a state where there's no up and down and has to, from the heart and motivation, what is the measure and what needs to be done?
The first part of your question, the description is right on. It's the modes of nature. It's both, but it starts with the mode of passion. Bhagavad Gita teaches us kamesha, krodesha. Before the lethargy is the passion. Passion says, I'm going to do it. Acting through false ego, acting through the mode of passion. I'm going to do it. And we all know what that mood is. We've been living it for so many years. I'm going to do it. And I've gotten rewarded and praised and appreciated for being one who can do it. False ego. Acting in false ego. That dissipates our enthusiasm. Because we just abandoned ourselves and we abandoned Krishna. And got swept away by the mode of passion. And then different varieties of the mode of ignorance also, lamentation, oh, I lost my enthusiasm. Or just lazy. Or other manifest. So, then you rightly said, we by maintaining the association of the devotees, then we get reminders. That's what we're supposed to do with one another in association is, nicely, gently, warmly, affectionately assist one another to get back up and let's go forward. To assist one another in progressing on the path of spiritual life. So the measure, there are several measures, that was your question. Measure is, the measure of steadiness is this the effort that we're making to continue, the striving, that's one measure. And detachment is another measure. So how deeply do we recognize that this? You can say sense gratification, but it even more blunt and direct language is trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. That whole enjoy separately from Krishna effort, that's the fundamentally flawed part, and that's what I need to address. So the measure is how much Krishna's enjoyment is at the center, and how much separately enjoyment from Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that, you know, our old habits or a attraction subsides. It's a measure. And attraction for Krishna. Our level of enthusiasm for its measure. I may be way over here, but I can be very enthusiastic to get there. Or I can be way over here and think, what's the use? I'm way over here. So measure of progress is one's enthusiasm. And depending upon Krishna, I can sustain that enthusiasm. It's not depending upon me. If it's depending upon me, forget it. I just close up shop and check out, because not going to happen. But depending upon Krishna, then I can sustain my enthusiasm. So that's another measure. That's a symptom of surrender, depending upon Krishna in all one's endeavors. And not just the spiritual one. All one's endeavors. It's across the board. All one's endeavors depending upon Krishna. That's a measure. Another standard types of measures. One's eagerness to serve the devotees. Measure. Eagerness for that association and the medium of association is service. It's a measure. So now the how to is we practice. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nandi kamino. We practice. Abhyasa is practice. Practice and practice makes perfect. Practice with feeling. Desiring, not a mechanical kind of practice, but desiring to connect with one's real self once again, connect with Krishna once again, desiring. Abhyasa. So the regulations of sadhana bhakti, vidhi sadhana bhakti, helps us get there under proper guidance and in good association.
Can you please elaborate on?
Can I do which?
Can you please elaborate on various components of regard for Krishna?
What are the components of regard for Krishna? What are the components of regard for Krishna?
You said that we are subjected to deity because of disregard for Krishna.
Yeah. Well, by that's a phrase that I use. It means, Do we see Krishna in a friendly or an unfriendly way? You know, are we Hiranyakashipu or are we Prahlad? That's how we regard Krishna. That's what I mean by that phrase. Are we inimical toward Krishna or aloof from Krishna or callous toward Krishna? Or pretending that because it's, you know, it's socially something nice that you say something nice, but we don't have any regard at all. Like we might have, you know, the impersonal tendency is very strong. So we could be in the company of others and just not even pay any regard to them. And we can do that on this plane, that stems from this plane. That's what I mean by our regard for Krishna. How are we disposed? Yayatam mam prapadyante tamstataiva pachamyaham. That's the scriptural reference for this. I say regard. Krishna says surrender. As they surrender unto me. So as they have regard for Krishna. Because if it's all living entities, Kamsa has regard for Krishna too. Fear. Shishupala has regard for Krishna too. Enmity. Oh, that's what I mean by regard. As we are disposed towards Krishna, that's going to determine our conceptions of life, the modes of nature that we're conducted by, what comes at us and what comes from us. Just upon that, what conception we have about Krishna, the regard that we have for Krishna, how we were disposed towards Krishna. Yes, Erade.
And then come to decision.
Yes.
And then I try to do this, sometimes I get very nice realization, strength, and but because I have the tendency for being very analytical, many times.
You have a tendency for?
Being analytical.
Yeah.
So many times it goes into trying to.
Over analytical.
Yes.
And to not into the realm of action, just into the space of analyzing and getting exhausted from analyzing.
And sometimes it leads me into the wrong direction, because one of the functions of intelligence is to create doubts. I heard in one lecture that sometimes I get doubts, and then I become afraid to even deliberate or contemplate because I'm afraid I'm not ascending, or maybe I become faithless or something like that. So how do I, what is the difference between just accepting what we are hearing submissively and how to deliberate without going into the...
Well, Prabhupada says we're not blind followers. Accepting what one hears submissively doesn't bypass intelligence. Not a bypass surgery. We just bypass our intelligence, just hear and don't think and just blindly follow. That's not recommended, ever recommended. Now go back to analyzing. So you hear. Now it's the one part that you omitted in your repeating of what I said is most important, and that is the mood of that contemplation is the mood of service. And the mood of service says, how can I live according to this principle? How can I serve Krishna according to this principle? The mood is what it's active, it's not passive, it's not mere contemplation. How do I bring this into the world of action? How do I serve the master of the senses with my senses, with the assistance of this intelligence? And when it's not in your question or your words, you are describing at a certain point you start to feel, and when you start to feel those feelings that says I'm not going about this the right way, that's a prompt, a super soul prompt that says, hold on here, Jai Radhe. Don't just go into this world of the intelligence analyzing things, because what's going to happen is it's going to go into the mind and the world of feelings, and you're going to get stuck over there. Go back to some practical action. If you need to, then just put that on hold for some time and busy yourself with some practical activity. Now put on the brakes and pause, hit the pause button. Okay, I'm prompt from Super Soul says, and my experience confirms, I'm going off what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm an analytical person also. He said, you told that. But you know, then you have to monitor that. That's part of the mood of, that's what the mood of service does. Because you want to serve. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the whole thing, to be situated in your relationship with Krishna through the medium of service. And again, the point, you know, I may be making an offense. That concern of making an offense is good. But that doesn't mean, you know, you anesthetize the intelligence or shut down. You just be concerned that you're not making offense and keep going forward with life and be concerned about not making offense. It's the mood that's the offense. It's not the act, you know, the contemplating. It's the mood of contemplation. How do I improve myself and become better servant? And it's just this comment about doubt. It's in Kapila Dev's, you can read it. I recommend you read it. It's not just the person that goes around doubting is the intelligent person. Rather, where there is, just like you raised a question, that's a sign of intelligence. It's not the doubt that says, I don't believe. It's the, I want to understand the distinction between this and that. And that raises a doubt. I want some clarification between this and that. That's the kind of doubt. That's the sign of intelligence. And then Prabhupada explains in the purport that it's not that when one doesn't know, then it's proper to raise the question. That's what doubt is. But then when one hears, to continue doubting is not a sign of intelligence. It's a sign of something else. It's a sign of faithlessness or weakness of faith. So that's where this effect of hearing comes in. One has to hear with the light on, not just in the mood of in the mood or the mode of forever doubting and forever questioning and never reaching any conclusions, because I want to always leave myself, my mind open. Some people speak like that. I want to be forever bewildered. Has to be open-minded. Reach no conclusions. Have no faith. So that's of course not what you're doing, but just keep moving towards the goal. Practically, you know, loving service. And those things that you can understand, you work on those things you can understand, and that will give you strength. And then you, from that strength, you can go the next step into things that you may not yet clearly understand. But stay in this realm of practical activity, practical service.
Yes. Questions can be solved.
That's right. You got it. Otherwise, our process would be a different process. It would be the one that you're now articulating. You rule it out. Our process is through the medium of service itself. Things become clear. As we go closer to the light, things that were not so discernible become discernible. Just by getting closer to the light. Krishna gives us the intelligence. So we have to be relying upon Krishna for that intelligence. And when Krishna is ready to supply that intelligence, we'll have it. If we're receptive, so we can be, we maintain our eagerness, enthusiasm, and rely upon Krishna. not relying upon ourselves. Because, you know, this, so we don't shut down. We don't shut our intelligence down. But it's part of our intelligence to recognize some things. It's going to have to wait till Krishna makes them clear. And that's fine. I'm ready to surrender on Krishna's terms. I trust Krishna. Perfectly fine. That doesn't mean I shut down my inquisitiveness. But I'm ready to be very patient until Krishna satisfies that inquisitiveness. I don't have the credential right now, otherwise it'll be clear. So let me work on the credential. Let me work on the mood of wanting, striving to please Krishna part. Striving, abhyasa. In the world of action, in real time, in real space, and just doing things for Krishna with as much devotion. So Krishna will be pleased. And then Krishna can disclose further things. Like that. Okay. Someone else had their hand up? Yes, right?
Guru Maharaj, yeah. This is regarding the prasadam prayers where we say this body is a network of ignorance. So how can we understand
the body is a lump of ignorance and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. So how do we understand that?
Yes, Maharaj, you just mentioned that false ego in contact with ignorance gives rise to the sense organs. I was just trying to...
Well, you know, it can work the other way around. If, you know, by Krishna's mercy, this prasad, the mercy of Krishna in various forms, this very body and the senses can be our, and the mind can bear means of deliverance. So it's, the statement is, in material consciousness, that's the case. Like, you know, when the soul is within the body, it identifies with the body and goes over the bridge into the realm of false ego. And then, etc. The body is a lump of ignorance in the senses of a network of paths, because you follow the path of trying to satisfy the senses. Where does it lead you? Darkness of ignorance.
You said that impersonal conception is formed due to frustration.
Prabhupada writes that in Bhagavad Gita.
So I was just wondering that joy of devotional service will help break this conception.
But that joy of devotional service is something that comes of its own accord. It's not that we go out and get it. The joy of devotional service is the joy of the humble servant feeling Krishna is using me as his instrument. And it comes naturally. Like when we're borrowing from Prabhupada's phrase, we're packed up with Krishna. We feel joy. But that packed up is not something I do. It's something, you know, Krishna's embrace. Krishna is pleased. So from our side, we should try to, in a very simple, humble mood, try to serve and please Krishna. There's joy in that. We'll go down some notches and say, we all of us, I'm certain of it, have had the experience of the happiness and the mode of goodness. Which is, you set aside some selfish interest, you go out of your way to do something for someone. And there's a contentment that isn't like sense gratification and, you know, intoxication or you know, the mode of goodness and the mode of passion and ignorance. There's a happiness in the mode of goodness. And we enjoy that happiness in the mode of goodness. We become conditioned by that happiness in the mode of goodness. And that and transcendental happiness is way beyond that. It's on the platform of the soul. We just serve Krishna. And if Krishna's soul allows us to be his instrument in some, however little, simple that service may be, there's a satisfaction that can't compare to any kind of material happiness, including the one of goodness happiness. It's just relationship with Krishna happiness, being with such a lovable person. That happiness. But being with Krishna means to be in the mood of serving him. Anything else? No? Something? Radha?
Yes. When you were talking about the activities of the Lord when he comes to us, Ram can be getting separated from Sita. Similarly, I want to understand the activity of Lord Damodar Leela when he was crying and Yashoda Mai finding it.
Well, what particular part of it? Why he was crying? I mean, what she was feeling, or what he was feeling, or why he was crying, or what?
What he was feeling.
Well, Queen Kunti says he was feeling fear, which bewilders Kunti because he's feared by fear personified. And how is he afraid? He's afraid of a little stick. A little stick. And Mother just saw his hand. The same Krishna knew that Putana came to kill him. He knew the Trinavarta. Before he came, he was coming. When Krishna saw Kamsa seated on this big throne, Shukadeva Goswami says while he was fighting with Chanur and Mushtika, he kept glancing at Kamsa. Gives a metaphor, like a lusty boy for a young girl. He wanted to kill Kamsa. And Kamsa was so powerful, he had terrorized the whole planet, and here he is afraid of a little stick, and Mother Jasoda's hands crying, fearful. Bewildering to Kunti. So what was he feeling? It's the love of Mother Jasoda. He becomes subordinate to the love of his devotee. That's what he was feeling. The love of Mother Jasoda. And when Mother Jasoda saw that Krishna was crying, trembling, his whole body was shaking, she threw away the stick. She wanted to check her son out of motherly affection. It's my duty. She didn't want to cause Krishna to be afraid when she saw. He begged her, please put away that stick. But that's what he was feeling, fear. But it's you can use this language, it's not these pastimes are eternal, but from moment to moment, when bound, then he saw the twin Arjun trees and thought, okay, now I must deliver, I must fulfill the words of Narada. Because he said, and I would deliver them. So this is the perfect opportunity. Got this little border behind me. Knock over the tree. So he's the personality of Godhead at all times, even when crying before the stick of Mother Jasoda. But by the influence of his own yogamaya potency, he feels varieties of feelings for his own pleasure. That's what he was feeling. And it's too easy to think it's like us, when we feel fear, with that feeling of fear, or a little child seeing, and then the little child cries, it's not like that. This is a perverted reflection of that. That's pure. It's Mother Jasoda's love. And her wanting to correct her son, fear, out of love. And it's that same love that bound Krishna. She didn't bind Krishna by rope, she bound Krishna by love. It's transcendental, it's fully transcendental. So this is where this, going back to Jairani's question, how can we understand that? We can't understand that with our discriminating faculty. We can describe it, we can hear it, we can't understand it. Except through purity and practical devotional service, and Krishna can illumine that understanding within our hearts. Then we understand it, so we can be patient for that realization, that understanding, and meanwhile go on with what we do understand, and I should just serve Krishna. And appreciating how wonderful is Krishna. He's so wonderful, it's just inconceivable. And that genuine feeling of appreciation for Krishna increases our purity and our capacity for realization. It's this dynamic, never staying the same kind of a circumstance. Even the Calvert boys were astonished and again seeing Krishna do different things. Oh, Krishna is so wonderful. And then there's this whole thing of transcendental affection in the spiritual world. When Krishna kicked over the cart, little boys told Mother Jasoda and Nanda, this is what happened. Krishna lifted his foot and kicked the cart. And everything went flying in all directions, and this terrible demon, the cart came and crushed him. We saw. Because of their affection, they can't see like that. Our feelings towards Krishna determine how we perceive what we experience. And there's variety. When Krishna entered the wrestling arena of Kamsa, such a nice verse. So many personalities saw Krishna in a different way. Same Krishna walking across the wrestling arena. They all saw a different way, according to their feelings for Krishna. This is this regard for Krishna. According to their regard for Krishna, they saw in a different way. Kamsa saw him as death personified. And the elder gopis, the elder women saw our little darling Krishna. And the coward boys, our hero. And the yogis saw him as like Paramatma moving across the... Each according to how we regard Krishna. So something more on this?
When Sudama goes to Krishna and Krishna washes his feet,
yeah,
and he has tears in his eyes.
Sudama has tears in his eyes. Or Krishna has tears
in his eyes.
Yeah. So, what's your... That's a statement.
It's a question also.
Well, the question is, what is Krishna feeling again? love. He's treating Sudama externally. He's treating him as a brahmana. And so that's the behavior. He's washing his feet. I'm kshatriya, but he's brahmana. Krishna's not kshatriya, but he's treating him as if I'm kshatriya, you're brahmana, and he's respecting. But Sudama's a devotee, and his love for Krishna is such that it's bringing tears from Krishna's eyes. The love of Sudama for Krishna is so pure, bringing tears to Krishna's eyes. And he's looking at Sudama's eyes, and Sudama is looking at Krishna's eyes, and an exchange of love, pure love. There's the externals, and then there's the internal, what their feelings are for one another. Externally, Sadama's feeling very uncomfortable. My dearly beloved friend is washing. But it's out of love. And so, he's not just accepting the act, he's accepting the love. He's giving, just, that's what's happening. And then there's varieties of that. Krishna snatches his bag of rice. You brought something and you're not sharing with me. No, it's 10th class rice. He's not fit for you. It is wonderful. Rukmini had to stop him. That's enough. It's love. Big varieties of love. That's Krishna and his associates. And that's the spiritual world that he's inviting us to. Anything else?